Hi, Gabrielle. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. I have here a little promo that you sent me. Only the Stars is the new CD from The Long Farewells, which is the name of the group.
Yep.
And this is the second release from Bear Trap Spring Records.
That's right.
And it's available on all the streaming platforms on November 1st. You can find it, go to YouTube, and it's on Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp, Amazon. You can buy the actual disc through CD Baby.
Although my mom bought all the ones that we had already put out there, so we're waiting on the restock.
Oh, no. That's funny. So I actually met Gabrielle. Gosh, we were just trying to figure that out. It might be 10 years ago we did this Americana Music Showcase thing.
Yeah, I think it was longer than that.
Maybe
it was
longer.
More like 15. 15 yeah.
years. Wow. Yeah. And we did a voice lesson or two
yep.
together.
And then you sang at my wedding?
I did.
10 years ago.
I did. That was exciting.
Yep.
And you still married?
Yes.
The same guy? You never know these days. I know you have two kids now.
I do, yeah.
So what were you doing musically during the time before... Well, the Lost Cartographers were all during that time.
That was
right?
during yeah, that time, yeah. Aaron Rester and I met, we were just talking about that, probably 2005. And then we met keyboard player Aaron Fusco, and the three of us started playing as a trio.
Well, you guys had been in a band together before
we just sort
that.
Of, yeah, we played together. And then we added our bass player, Carl Siegfried, and drummer, Jason Haheim, and played it as a five-piece for several years. And then recorded our album in 2008 or 9.
Which we're going to play something from
yes,
today?
Yes, we'll play something from. So we performed quite a bit. We played some pretty big name venues.
Yeah,
and
we played everywhere from Unplugged at Uncommon Ground to Empty Bottle to Double Door.
Shubas.
Shubas. We played a couple of duo shows, just Gabrielle and me.
Taste of Chicago. We played Taste of Chicago.
Taste of Chicago. Yeah, so we had a pretty good run there.
That's
yeah.
good. That's good. And yeah. then that band, some personnel members.
Yes, we disbanded probably just maybe a few years, a year after the album came out. Yeah.
Okay.
And then Aaron and I have stayed in contact and wanted to perform as a duo and to sort of resuscitate some of the songs we played as a band.
Okay.
That he had written and that I had written that we never recorded. So that was the idea behind our new album, Only the Stars.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so do you have another full-time job? You have two kids.
I do have two kids.
That's a full-time job.
Yes. And I teach writing at National Lewis University in their undergraduate program.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just and Aaron, you have a very interesting bio. I looked at your bio. I should pull up the bios. I have them here. But I noticed on here that you grew up in the Catskills.
Yep.
Which is
right.
interesting. And you lived kind of out in the woods.
Yeah, it was
It was the Catskills. It wasn't just like people say like a resort or something.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it was it's kind of funny. My wife talks about how, you know, like on our second date or something, I was telling her these stories and she was like, "Who is this guy?"
You lived in a log cabin yeah. with no running water. What?
Yeah, I mean, we did have running water during the summer. It was just during the winter.
Okay,
that,
the pipes
that,
would freeze.
Yeah, the pipes would freeze, and so we would have to carry the water up from the spring. You know, any water that we needed for cooking or washing or flushing the toilet and when I say we, I mean my parents would carry the water up. I was mostly too small to carry the water. So. But yeah, so the spring that we got our water from was called the Bear Trap Spring.
Oh.
And the cabin, the local story, the cabin was on a cliff, and the story was that the local Native Americans used to chase bears off of the cliff, and then, you know, kind of like you know, butcher them once they had fallen off the cliff and broken their legs or whatever.
Okay.
So it was called the Bear Trap Cabin and Bear
okay.
Trap Spring.
I always wondered how they, you know, how do you trap a bear? I mean, you could shoot an arrow, but it would take about 50 before it would come down.
I don't know.
That sounds like
a
very clever and safe way to.
Yeah, it's
to
probably
it.
Not even true, but you know,
yeah,
it was,
well, maybe.
It was a,
I don't know.
It's a good story, and that was where the name of the record label
sure.
came from.
Yeah,
it was the Bear Trap Spring. So,
oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I was wondering about that, and you know, we talk about the environment all the time. The Ashokan Reservoir, which you said here in your bio, provides water to New York City. I'm sure it's still there and is probably at risk now from all kinds of fracking and other things going on.
I don't know. My understanding is that it's actually still pretty clean.
Good. That's good.
It was started in 1904 or 1905, somewhere around there, and they actually wound up building what was at the time the largest dam in the world. From what I understand. To create this reservoir.
Oh, I see. It's a man-made lake.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And they actually had to relocate a bunch of towns that were in the area where the reservoir was being created.
Because they would be flooded.
Exactly. Yeah. So some of the towns were moved down the a few miles down the road. One of them was just kind of abandoned entirely. And we have a song about this on the new album. It's called Brown Station. It was the name of the town that basically disappeared. So when I was a kid, my stepfather would take me out. When the water was low, you could go out and kind of walk around, kind of on the floor of the lake, basically, on one of the basins. And there would be fossils there that had washed down
from the mountains.
From the mountains, yeah.
Was there a drowned town or two?
There were. there.
That's always interesting.
You could see some foundations in certain places, but they had pretty much removed everything because they were going to have water there. But there were cemeteries there, and they had to pick up the bodies and move
relocate
the bodies
all that, yeah.
There was a certain price you would get for moving a body. They would the city would pay you basically to move the body or to move a headstone. So in my mind as a kid, this was kind of this magical, like it was like Atlantis, this like drowned
city.
Yeah,
that's what you think of.
Yeah. So that's where the track Brown Station on our album comes from.
Interesting. Well, we're going to take, just one moment here. Wait, because I skipped looking at Gabriel Schaefer's bio here. Okay, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I see your influences, a lot of country, and you worked for Rolling Stone magazine for a while?
I did, yeah.
That's
that was my first job out of college, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
How do you make that happen? That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Fortuitous.
More importantly, how do you get us back in there?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So you wrote musicians' biographies,
yeah.
And what's the most interesting? Well, here you have you conducted interviews with up and coming new artists. Is there a story there you want to share?
I've got a couple. I actually interviewed Common when he was Common Sense.
I love him.
Yeah. Before he was famous at all, and that was pretty cool because I was a big fan of hip hop and his music, and so I did an interview with him. And I also met Hanson. Do you remember Mbop?
Oh yeah.
Right?
You mean Hanson? They're
brothers.
Multiple Hansons.
Yeah, there were
yeah.
two brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were a big deal back in whenever I had this job.
That's right.
And I got to meet them. And then Nelly Furtado.
Sure.
Interviewed her.
Oh wow.
Tony, members of that band started a band with En Vogue that sort of disappeared, but I got to interview them and do. A piece on them.
Interesting.
So yeah, it was a cool job. I met a lot of interesting artists, but it was a lot of sitting at the computer on the internet.
Sure.
So it kind of had its time and place in my early 20s, and then I decided to go into teaching, which is what I'm doing now, which
That's
is a little
awesome.
More hands-on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I studied English, wanted to be a writer, wanted to be a music journalist, and then changed tracks and became an English teacher.
Yep.
Yeah.
I get that. I teach. I still teach voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well. It says here that you and Aaron decided to reconvene after the long hiatus from Lost Cartographers and recorded some of the original material with the band that you hadn't had a chance to record.
Yeah.
And the result is the debut album as The Long Farewells, Only the Stars. And I'm going to play a cut from that right now, in fact. And we changed. Oh, no, I'm playing Johnny.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, this is our single from the album. Do we want to talk about the title? Just
sure.
Quickly? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the title. Yeah. Go
and
ahead.
The you were earlier talking about the 1910-ness of the whole thing,
yeah.
And I want to hear a little bit about that too, but anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, we wanted a title that encompassed kind of the Midwestern aesthetic that we were going for and the sense of history and place, and so Only the Stars is a line from a Carl Sandburg poem about the prairie, and so just wanted to kind of explain that, yeah. And Aaron can speak to the historical kind of aspect
of
the songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think actually the original idea for an album about the 1910s, I think it was actually Carl's idea, the bass player in The Lost Cartographers, when after we were we had recorded the album Walk On with The Lost Cartographers, we were kind of kicking around ideas about, you know, what to do next, and I think it was Carl's idea, you know, as sort of a you know, 100 years ago, you know, as kind of the framing device for the album. And that was, for me, that was really kind of fascinating. Kind of set me off on a bunch of research about, well, yeah, you know, the 1910s, like that's not a decade that people really think about much, or, you know, they don't really, you know all that much about it. I remember I saw a poll a couple of years ago, I don't remember where it was from, but it was something about asking, you know, Americans which decade they would like to have lived in the 20th century.
Okay.
And the 1910s came in dead last.
Because nobody knows much about the 1910s.
You know,
yeah.
So people would have preferred to have lived through World War II than to be in the 1910s. And so, you know, I thought it was pretty interesting. So it kind of sent me down a bunch of like research rabbit holes of you know, like what happened and what were the kinds of things that were going on in the 1910s.
I'm reading your one sheet for the CD right now, and it says here that the 1910s shaped much of what would eventually define our world today, from the widespread adoption of technological wonders like audio recording, automobiles, and air travel, to the horrors of war, of course, in that would have been World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Many people, let's see, for many Americans, the second decade of the 20th century exists only as a hazy interval between the Old West and the Roaring Twenties, but it was a time overflowing with its own compelling stories. So you did some research. What was the most interesting thing that you want to share, or a couple of them, about the 1910s?
Oh, man.
That brought you to... And we have all the.
Well, I think we're gonna play a song a little bit in a little while, called "Up from the South," which is a song about the 1919 Chicago race riots.
Okay.
Which was something that I had not heard about at all when I, you know, kind of stumbled across it. Obviously, the centennial was earlier this year, so it seems like it is finally something that Chicago is starting to try and reckon with. You know, at the time I was really not, I wasn't familiar with the events, so that was you know, really kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
And when we put the song out before the album came out, it was surprising how many people had never heard of this event.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who grew up in Chicago and were familiar with Chicago history.
Okay.
So I think it's an interesting story about this event, this tragic event that a lot of Americans don't know about.
Yes. What would you tell people they should know about the race riots?
Well,
it sticks in your head about that. I think I might have done some coverage on that at one point. I was looking.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take credit for this insight. I think it is, you know, something that a lot of people were saying over the centennial, but that those events really kind of shaped Chicago's approach to race and segregation in neighborhoods moving through the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's really important for us to, as we kind of wrestle with the legacy, to recognize, you know, how impactful those events were at the time.
Well, I look forward to hearing the song about that, and appreciate the research. I might look into that a little bit more and see if I can, you know, in the weeks to come, you know, talk about that.
Great.
Some more, because I talk a lot about race on the show. But now I'm going to play the single off of the debut album from The Long Farewells, released on November 1st, and This is called, well, the album is called Only the Stars, and this is called Johnny Went Off to War. Second, that was Johnny Went Off to War. Sorry. As the one I played from from Hazel Dickens, when you're old and only in the way, my brain doesn't always function the way it should, especially on a Sunday morning. But so, great cut. I enjoyed that. And on off mic, we were just talking about, as it was playing, we were talking about the CD release. Oops, yes. Party, which is coming up. So tell us about that.
We are playing at Montrose Saloon.
Oh, I like that room.
Yeah, yeah. 9 o'clock on Friday night, this coming Friday, Friday the 15th.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're okay. Sharing the bill with John Mead, who I believe is a teacher at Old Town and a musician, obviously.
And I think his band is going to be doing some Stones album, all the way through, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool. But, yeah, so it should be a fun night. Oh, like we go on promptly at 9 o'clock.
Tribute.
Yeah, yep. I think so. Yeah.
All right, that's awesome.
And it's a $5 cash only cover at the door.
Okay.
We should tell people that so they don't show up and
no.
You know, I
cards.
Did not realize that at not that I would ever consider paying a cover charge with that with a credit card. I don't know why it never occurred to me to do that, but at Fuller's they don't take cards. And I did not know that. So all you musicians out there, when you're doing a show, you know, you put the 21 plus, you put the cover charge. One more thing you need to put.
Right.
Whether or not they have food, because that's the question that comes up all the time to me when I'm performing somewhere. And do they take credit cards?
Yeah, I don't think there's food in Montrose Saloon. But there are plenty restaurants of taquerias all around. Yeah, nearby. Yeah.
We were just also talking. We're going to play some more music right away, but... we were talking about the nature of being a songwriting kind of musician mm-hmm. in Chicago.
Yeah.
And in my experience has been, you know, if you want to do commercial work, you can maybe make a living. Although my friends who are jobbing musicians are struggling now. It's getting harder and harder because people are using their iPods and stuff mm-hmm. at weddings and, you know, playing their doing DJs instead. But if you're a singer-songwriter type person, it's really basically not happening unless you travel.
Yeah.
There's no way, I think, to really make a solid living. So we all make decisions to do other things.
Yeah.
And just keep doing our art, you know. And sometimes you hit a wall and you think, why am I doing this? And then you remember it's not about the money.
Yeah, no.
And I think, you know, the idea that music should be reserved for people who only make a living for it is really, you know, counterproductive. Back in the day, you know, it was music was something that everybody did
sure.
all the time. And
that's right.
And I think we do ourselves a disservice if you know, just because for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's access, maybe it's talent, maybe it's whatever, you know, if we think, oh, I'm not good enough to do this, you know, to keep ourselves from playing music because of that, we're really doing ourselves a disservice. Yeah.
Everybody I know, I know so many incredibly talented people. You know, if you live in one area, you're doing something else to support your music habit and continuing to create. And, you know, for me, I started the pet care service it's been 30 years. It's my 30th year in business.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's small enough that I sometimes run into financial hurdles, but it keeps me going and I still have time and energy to work on the music. And, you know, it's very frustrating right now, especially the state of the music industry. It's so corporate and so kind of put paint by numbers, you know, when you look at all the people that are famous.
Yeah.
And all the shows that support the idea of fame and the winner and loser mentality. I talk about this all the time. The whole pyramid scheme of shows like The Voice, you know, where they have paid groovers in the seats, and then the minute somebody starts to attract a little bit of attention, they immediately rush out a CD, and then they put all kinds of corporate money behind that, and they promote it. And it's kind of like what Trump is doing. You know, it's like you own the media, so you can create a situation where people just, that's the only thing they've heard of, so they follow that, you know. But in my experience, when people get exposed to quality music that actually has something to say, they respond to it.
Yeah. Well, I think about this a lot at this point in my life with two children and not a lot of, well, no help really, except my husband.
Yeah.
That's primarily what I do is I'm parenting. So mm-hmm. a lot of the singing and the practicing and the writing is in like the margins of my life, like late at night, early in the morning when someone's taking a nap on a Saturday afternoon. And that's just real life. That's what we have to do. My husband's also an artist. He's a painter. He's been wanting to set up a studio in the garage, so he'll slip away into the garage for 20 minutes here and there to try and get his studio set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you have a family and you have jobs, it's just you got to squeeze it in while you can, and inspiration might hit when you're in the car. And I sometimes dictate melodies into my phone.
Me too.
And I write lyric ideas in my little notepad or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my 2-year-old has started to tell me to stop singing in the car, which I'm take very personally, but obviously, but that's what I do. You know, if I'm in the car, I'm working out a melody or I'm practicing I get shushed a lot by my children, but that's okay. So I think
they don't understand.
So I think as an artist with other big parts of your life that you have to work around, you have to just squeeze it into the margins.
And I'm not sure it's a bad thing. I mean, you know, since the beginning of humanity, as we've talked about before, maybe off mic, I don't know, but art has always been something that people did for themselves and their community. And, you know, there may be some people that sort of rose to the top as far as, you know, everybody liked their stuff better. But there was never this kind of wall that was, you know, that other people weren't allowed to. And basically, one of my friends, Lance Brown, who's a veteran singer-songwriter, he's been around Chicago a long time. His life is so hilarious. We talk about this a lot, but he did a Will Rogers show for years. He went around the country and, you know, learned how to do rope tricks and everything. And it was sort of like the wit and wisdom of Will Rogers. So he would do a college show for 45 minutes for $5,000 and then come back to Chicago and play all night for $50 in a bar, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the nature of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think when you change your you need things to write about if you're a writer.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a real life, In addition to your art, what are you gonna talk about?
Some of the worst music ever has been made by people complaining about being famous for their
music.
Oh,
I know. So true.
Really, the only people that I know personally who are musicians who are able to sustain themselves doing it tour all the time.
Yeah, you have to travel.
Yeah, I have a very dear friend, Edie Carey, who's a really awesome singer-songwriter, and she's also a mother, and she tours all the time. She is home for little bits here and there, and she's touring
tough.
On the weekends and. Because that's what you got to do.
I'm getting near Social Security age, so that's going to be my window of freedom, you know, to have money coming in that I don't have to spend hours of my day, and I can arrange the rest of my schedule so that I, you know, don't have to do the Monday through Friday. Maybe I'll do more house sitting or, you know, more training because I train dogs also, and get on the road, you know, even if it's just regionally. I'd like to get out of town and see what other people think, you know, about.
You just have to, as we were recording this album, it was, I would ask myself, well, why are we doing this? And what's our mission?
True.
Why are we doing
this?
And it really is to, get these sort of story songs out into the world. Mm-hmm. That was my primary, motivation. I didn't have,
It wasn't about fame and fortune.
No, obviously
it's about
not.
Telling some. Telling
it's about
a
telling
story.
Stories. Yeah.
And for me too.
Because, you know, as singers and musicians, we feel compelled to sing and play songs and to tell stories. So that's really why
it's very true. And it's the best reason to do it. And thank goodness for, I have to say again, you're listening to us, if you are, live on Q4 Radio, which is www.QUE4.org. Q4 has a motto, create beauty and defend it, which I love. And they do a lot of great stuff here, a lot of visual art openings and things like that. And it's the community. We just have to get out and do stuff in the community. My music is kind of message oriented. You know, I have a lot of topical stuff, a lot of political stuff, and sort of human, secular humanist kinds of ideas that I think people need to hear. And so that's my motive, you know. So I'm trying to increasingly find ways to attach my music to various causes, you know, where I would show up and just play three songs on the environment or something for an environmental meeting.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more important than fame and fortune, you know, which is a pretty empty goal to have for your life, I think.
Yeah.
Although this week I'm in automotive hell, and it would be nice to have a little extra money. Because
I'm not going to turn down the fortune.
No, I'm not going to turn it down. I promise to use it for good. All right, well, I think we're ready to play. Do you want to do a live one, or should I play another cut?
I'll play another cut maybe from the first album. I'm ready to do that.
All right, so we've got from The Lost Cartographers, we're going to play a song called Big Old House.
Yeah.
Now, is this one of yours?
This is one of my original songs.
Okay. Johnny was
Aaron
Rester's
song.
Okay.
Yeah, this is one of my original songs that was on the Last Cartographers album.
Okay.
And do you want me to talk about the song a little bit?
Sure.
Or just play it?
Yeah.
So, I actually, this song, it's one of those songs that just came to me kind of as a really nice flash of inspiration. I got the title track, That Big Old House Never Stood a Chance. And it is about my family, and it's kind of about, the mythology of a family and what happens kind of when that mythology falls apart. And so it's semi-autobiographical, I would say.
I think that's a pretty universal topic, though.
Yeah.
A very, very valuable topic. Oh, and you wanted to mention, before we get too much further and totally forget, on the on Only the Stars, you wanted to talk about the fiddle player?
We just wanted to give a shout-out to Sarah Blick. Who played fiddle on that track and on several other tracks on the album. She's no longer living in Chicago.
Aww.
She's out in San Diego now. So unfortunately, she will not be able to join us at the show on Friday. But definitely check out some of her stuff. She had a band called Sugar Still.
Mm-hmm. Sugar Still?
Yeah, you should check out their stuff as well.
Okay. So now we're going to play a Gabriel Schaefer song called Big Old House, which she just told you about. And this is from the Lost Cartographers. Boy, that's a mouthful. disc, which is called Walk On. And here we go with Big Old House. That's not the right CD player.
Cold Chicago winter night. Dinner times at 8. Chicken frying in the pan. Daddy was running late. How long should we wait tonight for Daddy to come? Mama says give him some time, with him you never know. Goldwyn smells of whiskey when he stumbles in. Kids can't wait to see you, honey, where you been? That big old house never stood a chance, built on dreams and quicksand, hope and happenstance. And if that house falls in the night when no one is around, does it make a sound? Does it make a sound? When they first met, they took long walks down to the lake. Sometimes they were skinny dip, Mama was feeling brave. Daddy was a quiet man, full of poetry. And Mama talked the blue streak and was so pretty. But now they hardly talk at all, except when the kids are near. Mama wakes up in the night, full of fear. That big old house never stood a chance, built on dreams and quicksand, shaky like an avalanche. And if that house falls in the night when no one is around, does it make a sound? Does it make a sound? Does it make a sound? Daddy packed his bags, slipped out in the night. Mama told the kids everything's all right. Does it make a sound? Does it make a sound? If that house falls in the night when no one is around, does it make a sound? Does it make a sound?
Oh, I really enjoyed that. Big old house. From Gabriel Schaefer from The Lost Cartographers. And I just want to be sure that I don't keep playing something I didn't want to play. Okay. We're going to keep talking, but I just had something I wanted to be sure and share with you before we're done, because we're going to get done way too fast. And I don't know if you heard about this. This came from the Daily Kos on November 7th. Fox News reported that Obama's PC meetings were political correctness meetings, which is incredibly stupid. On Wednesday, Fox News reporter Sam Dorman wrote an explosive story with the headline, CIA staff complained about Obama White House's political correctness, new book claims. A new book by conservative writer Doug Mead claimed that when he was asking his sources about the Obama administration's White House, he was told that President Obama wasn't able to get things done because his administration was too busy dealing with snowflake issues like what to call people. Next thing they said was that in the previous administration, they spent a lot of time in the White House doing nonstop PC or political correctness meetings. Well, too bad that's just entirely wrong. So they did hold PC meetings, and they held them all the time, but the term PC means Principals Committee, which is a top-level interagency meeting convened by the National Security Council. Numerous people pointed this out to Fox News, and Doug, it says Weed, I don't know if it's Weed or Mead, but, you could Google it in 2 seconds. So the tweet storm is really, really funny. People are just cracking up about that. I just had to share that because it made me laugh. And now, back to Gabriel and Aaron. Whoops. Hang on a second.
You trade lives and human dignity for profit.
That's a speech that I wanted to play for you today, but I'm not going to get to it, I don't think. Okay, so what do you want to do? Want to play something live?
Sure.
That'd be great. So what's this going to be from? before you do
we
it?
We are going to play Up From the South, which is off our album Only the Stars.
Okay.
So this is the
off
song
new
that,
record?
Yeah, that Aaron was talking about the race riots. This is one of his original songs.
Awesome.
When you came up from the south, taste of Jim Crow in your mouth, thought you found the land of milk and honey. Found a job at the stockyard, the pay was bad and the work was hard, feeling free was worth the meager money. Found a wife and made a home, Irish boys mostly left you alone. Almost never thought of Yazoo County. It don't take a Moses to part the waters of Lake Michigan. Just the finest linemen to keep you in. And Big Bill's boys won't stop the burning. Smell the smoke, the wind is turning. And the fire, it's heading your way. I heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. Heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. I heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. I heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. When you shipped off to France and didn't stand a ghost of a chance of coming back to this town alive. No man's land over in the trenches. Back in Paris with all the Frenchies, all you could see was your brand new bride. Now the streets are burning and she's not home. Fear is gnawing like a dog with a bone. Grab your head out the door and find the trouble you ain't looking for. And it don't take a Moses part the waters of Lake Michigan, just the finest linemen to keep you in. And Big Bill's boys won't stop the burning. Smell the smoke, the wind is turning, and the fire, it's heading your way. I heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. I heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. Heard they killed a boy down at the beach today. Heard they killed a boy down at the beach today.
Always nice to have such talented people in the studio.
Thank you.
So what's next for the new, after the new disc?
We should actually also mention that that song was co-written by our Lost Cartographers bandmate, Aaron Fusco.
Okay.
Who was the keyboard player in that
yeah.
band.
Thank you, Aaron Fusco. And that song is on the new disc.
It's on the new disc.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that song. That's awesome. Yeah. So what are you going to do? Just to try and find some more rooms to play?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
We'll look for some opening slots at bigger venues or something like that.
Yeah.
But we don't have any plans to go on tour or anything like that.
Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet.
But that's always the question. Like, what's next? What's next?
That's right.
You prepare for a show and then you do the show and then it's over. And then what's next?
And then what's next?
Yeah.
Which is You know, like all artistic careers, you know, if you make a career, it's constant. You're constantly looking for a job, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it's not like a 9-to-5 where you know that you got to go there the next day. You know, you got to always kind of be looking into the future. And
sometimes it's hard to stay motivated.
Yeah.
You know, but thank God if you're an artist, you really have no choice. You're going to do this regardless. So, you know, and with the new less expensive and better quality recording stuff, you know, it's just I did a lot of tracks on this new CD that I'm putting out. You know, I'd like to have a band and rehearse them and go in and do a lot of it live-ish mm-hmm. for the energy of it. But realistically, budgetarily and time-wise, you know, what I end up doing is calling the best people I can find and having them come in and just lay down a track. And then I have this palette of different things to play with, and then you actually create the project in the mix.
Our process was actually a little bit of a mix mm-hmm. of the two. Back when we were doing duo shows as the Lost Cartographers, we had the full band album, which wasn't a very accurate representation of sort of what we sounded like when we were just playing as a duo.
Sure.
So we wanted to do a duo demo. And so we
just for gigging and stuff.
So if we were, you know, putting ourselves out there, here's a demo of what we sound like as just the two of us. And so we started doing mostly live recordings with a friend of Gabrielle's named Tim Joyce. Who had a studio in his basement, and he kind of set us up, and he was very much into capturing the energy in the room,
mm-hmm.
you know, no click tracks, no nothing. And three of those songs actually wound up on the album. Actually, Johnny Went Off to War was one of those.
Oh, that's great.
Mema, which is the first track on the album. And then what was the other one? Oh, Up From the South. The album version of Up From the South was from those sessions as well. And so we did those songs, and then we kind of had those in the can, and then when we were like, you know what, let's just finish this ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the rest of it basically in my office. It was, you know, I would sort of record the basic tracks. Gabrielle would come in and lay down the vocals. We'd talk about the mix, what else should go in it, and so on. And so
maybe bring in somebody to play.
Yeah, we brought in. We brought in Sarah to play. Actually, when for Man from San Francisco, which is the second track on the album, she had already moved to San Diego. And so we asked her to, you know, we sent her the track, and she sent us tracks back. And so it was a long distance collaboration.
She did that remotely. Yeah, that was cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do a little bit of that for my new project. I'm trying to get my brother on doing sibling harmonies on a couple of the songs.
It was doing the harmonies was also really cool because I did my own harmonies. And so I just had so much more time to like come up with the harmony lines.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would lay down the melody vocal and mm-hmm.
then you could study it,
then
and
listen
try
to it
things
and try
yeah.
different things. And so
sure.
that was really a cool experience to harmonize with the melody vocal myself. And
I tried to come in for my project. I tried to get at least a rhythm section in the room together.
Yeah.
And then I would do a scratch vocal and guitar and I'd be in the booth, but we could see each other.
Yeah.
To try to get some live energy. And then I would come back and redo my guitar part and then redo my vocal. And then bring in people to add tracks. But, you know, I love doing it live. I did use a click. I think there are two songs I didn't use a click for because the person that I was recording with didn't want to use it. And it turned out we kind of should have. But it's okay. But I did have to use a click on the other ones because I was adding different things later. And it just makes it easier for the digital.
Yeah.
The digital world.
I should say that. So on the album, Aaron does all the instrumentation, banjo, guitar, bass, harmonica. Sarah did the fiddle and I did all the vocals. And then for the live performance, we are both playing guitar.
Yeah, because I gonna, you play guitar well.
Yeah. And I'm, well, thank you.
Or well enough.
Well enough. Well enough. He's better.
I play well enough.
I play guitar. Yes, I play guitar. That's it. And then we're bringing in a bass player, a Paul McComas, to join us on a few songs. And then Aaron's wife, Kate, will join us on harmonies because you can't harmonize with yourself live.
No, you can't.
It'd be kind of fun if you could. But Yeah, so we're going to have a different instrumentation set up at the live mm-hmm. show. So I'll play guitar and probably half the songs, which will be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think for the recording purposes, Aaron's kind of better at that. So
I spent a lot of years not feeling like my guitar playing wasn't good enough, which held me back from just taking my guitar and going and doing stuff.
Yeah.
But I've gotten over that, and it took some work, though. I had to focus on just, what was wrong with my playing for a couple of years, and it did get better. But I got one of my best compliments on Friday from a guy. Steve Hashimoto is like an A-list jobbing player in town. He plays with everybody. He's a brilliant bass player. And he plays with Al Rose and some other singer-songwriter type guys. But he also has like a Latin jazz group. And and I was we were talking about the mix, and he said, "Yeah, your guitar playing's fine." And I was like, "Oh my god, a fine from him was like better than because I know real guitar players.
Yeah,
and I am fine as a singer-songwriter accompanying myself.
Yeah,
and because I'm so eclectic, it has required me to learn how to play a lot of different styles of music, which is a positive thing. But I am not, I'm not the kind of I've never be a virtuoso on guitar.
I think when you are a singer, at least for me personally, I learned to play guitar to accompany myself singing.
Exactly.
And so that
primarily
was really
a singer.
Primarily the thing. Mm-hmm. And Aaron is not much of a singer.
Oh, okay.
No,
it's
kidding.
True. Although
I do teach voice. If you ever want to.
No, he's got his.
I could use some help. But I have a very specific Tom Waitsian range.
And I love Tom Waits.
That's my area. But
that's so funny.
But and you
it's,
know,
it's hard on your voice to sing like that.
And if you ask me to harmonize with anybody, I would not be able to do it. But I'm definitely also not I'm not a virtuoso by any means. I started playing guitar so that I could learn how to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And
the better you play, the better songs you can write.
It's true.
That's
true.
Right.
And I think for us, I think part of the reason that I wound up playing more on the album was sort of the digital nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
When we're playing live and there's kind of an organic ebb and flow of the song, it's fine. But when you do have that, kind of the tyranny of the click track.
That's right.
You have to be able to, there's a certain way that you have to play, which is for better or for worse. There's, I think you gain some things and you lose some things.
As is true with everything. But it takes time. And for people who think that the click has to feel artificial, I've worked a lot with the click, and there's a point where you relax into the click
mm-hmm.
and you stop fighting it. And it just becomes like a mantra underneath what you're doing, and you feel the pocket against mm-hmm. it, and then it's fine.
And
until you hit that point,
it's a
struggle.
That we definitely, there are a few drum tracks on the album that are like Logic drum tracks.
Oh, okay, all right.
But for a lot of the other ones, I wound up having to put in sort of organic sounding drum tracks in order to be able to play with them because I couldn't play it to the click.
It just wasn't working.
It was just too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, if there was a little bit of like, it felt a little bit more organic, then I can actually play to it.
I understand. Yeah. It does change things, and it's not something that if you're going to do a digital recording project, and you know you're going to have to work with a click, in terms of for the mixing and all that stuff. You need to spend some time, practicing with the click.
Have you heard Damon? What's his name? Damon Krakowski, I think, from Galaxy 500.
I don't think so.
He did a podcast, which I wish I could remember the name of, but it was on series called Showcase from Radiotopia, I think. He talks about it's about the way that the digital has changed the way that we play music.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the change from his, his early days in the 80s, just like going live in a room, then to, how just the effects that it has on what he's able to play. It's a great series. I definitely recommend it.
It's definitely different.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And I know that a lot of the younger, like the hip hop and rap people are, they've been playing against existing electronic tracks for a long time,
mm-hmm.
so they make that work, but it does change you have to be careful or everything kind of starts to sound the same, in
mm-hmm.
my opinion,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time, as we always do. I always think I don't have enough stuff, and then so what do we want to play?
Oh, let's do Midnight Love. Yeah, we're going to play Midnight Love, which is on the album. This is one of my original songs.
Okay.
It's actually a co-write with a friend in Toronto named Iman Wayne, who I'm not sure if she's listening, but hello, Iman. So this is a song we wrote together at a songwriting workshop called Song Studio in Toronto. So this is an older song, and we've been playing it as we played it as a full band, and Aaron and I have been performing it as a duo. It's called Midnight Love.
Off you go.
When the night's long and lonely, and I've been dreaming.
Let's try that again. See, then you know it's live.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Because live is real.
When the night's long and lonely, and I've been dreaming of your touch. Your sinful kisses were enough. Waiting for your midnight love. Midnight love, waiting for your midnight love. Midnight love, waiting for your midnight love. Waiting for your midnight. Try to fight it, but you pull me under. You roll into my harbor, and you bring the rain, you bring the thunder. I'm waiting for your midnight love. Midnight love, waiting for your midnight. Midnight love, waiting for your midnight love. Waiting for your midnight love. I know I try to fight it. I know how I deny it. Boy, you know I just can't get enough. Midnight love, waiting for your midnight love. Midnight love. Your midnight love. I've waited for so long, waiting for your midnight.
Sweet. I don't think that's about the 1910s necessarily,
well,
but it
I
could
think
be.
That experience can apply to many decades.
It could apply to any decade.
I like to joke that Aaron writes the songs about like the train wrecks and the race riots, and I try to inject a little bit of
yeah.
of love, a little bit personal. Of longing.
So
nobody, yeah. personal
not
stuff.
Everybody wants to kill themselves at the end of the show.
That's right. Well, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to try to play. I may have to fade it in the middle, but I want to play this cut from Americayana, which is a fabulous name. And a wonderful looking disc. I love the Hindu people on the cover there, artwork. And this is one of yours.
Yeah. So this was an album, the solo album that I did. I had started writing some of these songs with the Lost Cartographers, and then we decided that they weren't really the best fit But basically, it's an alternative country retelling of the ancient Hindu epic, the Ramayana.
okay.
Which
awesome.
is so in a past life, I was a doctoral student in history of religions, and I was particularly interested in the Ramayana and sort of the political uses of the Ramayana story in modern day India.
I may have to have you back again sometime if you'd be interested. I want to do a show on spirituality and social justice.
Hmm. Okay.
So that might be, that's an area that I had not hadn't thought about, you know, this particular Hindu thing.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, in keeping with the depressing aspects of this of my songwriting, I was interested in sort of the ways that this story was being deployed in it to kind of control people.
Ah, nice.
And to be to justify sort of man's inhumanity to man. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to say thank you very much to Aaron Rester and Gabriel Schaefer. I know your names. I'm just tongue-tied. And this has really been fun. Thank you so much for
coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, good luck next Friday. And here's a little bit of... probably just a little bit of A Small Sacrifice, which we will make when we have to dump it, from Americayana, which I just love the whole idea. So here we go.
On the farm, you try to stay warm, hold tight to his arms, and pray for a son. It's good to be king, not so much to be queen. Can't give him a child, carry on his name.
Before the dawn, you gotta know which side you're on and get on with it. On with it. Hungry people still need food. Find a way to do some good. On with it. Yeah, you gotta get on with it. Take the time to heal your heart. When you're ready to play your part.